Life Audio.
Today on Talk About That, John has a late night thanks to T-Swift and some T-Storms, and reveals how long he needs to know someone before going in for a hug. Meanwhile, I explain why there's a phone booth on top of the courthouse in Lincoln, Illinois, and I spend a lot of money on my dog's knees. Plus a conversation about cynicism and hopefulness, and why it's always more courageous to believe the best in people. Today's episode is not sponsored by party-sized bags of potato chips. Look, we know there's no party. Just eat the chips, you weirdo. But first, a word from our actual sponsor.
It's 45 minutes to an hour of pure adrenaline. Let's talk about that. I'm John, here with Johnny.
What's the time frame is interesting. 45 minutes to
an hour.
It's like when you see, there used to be a comedian that would say, if you have a like a party invitation and it says 7:30 to question mark.
Uh-oh.
The answer to that question is 7:45.
Yeah, I like having ending points, but you know, Johnny, what we do is we don't.
It's free form jazz odyssey. Yeah. You can't put us in a box.
Just because we set targets doesn't mean we have to hit the bullseye.
Literally, I won't fit in a box. I'm 6'4", 200 right. And...
What size of a box is required for a man of your stature?
I'm trying to find a gigantic box now because Curry has this old runner's wheelchair that she's trying to give to somebody.
Okay.
Because she doesn't use it, and it's for her... She takes care of a lady named Tabby. Well, Tabby doesn't... She didn't like riding in the chair.
Okay.
It's one of those, it's like a canvas sling kind of a chair.
Yeah.
So we're trying to give it to somebody, but like, you have to pay shipping, but it's $1,000 chair.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't, and she shows me all the parts. It's in, it folds up, but it's huge.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we don't have a box for this. So now I have to find.
How are you
just like
ship
searching
it?
For a box now to.
So you're trying to be altruistic.
Yes.
But in the middle of it, it costs. There's a price for being altruistic, and you're saying you're not willing to pay it.
It's not that.
Like, you want to be generous, but you don't want to lose too much. Like, you want to be a giver.
Right. But not if it makes me lose anything. Can I keep... Is there a way to keep the chair?
Wasn't it David that said, I will not give to the Lord that which costs me nothing?
Mm.
And you... are literally withholding that because it costs something. And I think that...
I don't think David ever had to mail a wheelchair.
It is true. You can't find this exact scenario in the Bible.
No.
No. I've looked.
Mm-mm.
So, yeah.
But
if you're out there,
you want, dear listener, you'd like a runner's wheelchair. This guy just passed away yesterday. I told my wife and she literally teared up at the table. There was a guy, I think his name was Hoyt, and you've seen posts about him. He's pretty famous because he had a disabled son who he would push
on
triathlons. Yeah. He did like 1,000 races with his son, and he passed away, I think it was this week. And so there was this big dedication on Facebook, and it was all these photos of him pushing his disabled son. And I mean, it made me cry, but when I told her, she was like, Mr. Hoyt, like she knew his name and he's so famous in the disability community. I don't know, man, what an inspiration that guy.
Yeah.
Just like trying to give his son again. He had a foundation in his son's name and he would raise money. And it's just so, I don't know. There's just some people like that. You just go, man, they really stepped out of themselves and gave. And what I'm doing is not doing that.
But, you're doing something, and I guess kind of like that.
Yeah.
Except minus the part that's inspirational.
I want to be an inspiration. It's just exhausting. You know?
Who really has time? You know how much energy it takes?
I think, here's the thing. I want to be one step below inspiration.
Okay.
I'm a cautionary tale.
Okay.
That's just...
It's just
people
as good.
Still take action based on my actions.
Right.
They just go, whatever you do...
Don't do that.
Don't. You need to zig when he zagged. That's just as good.
I think it works.
It's fine.
I think it works.
Do you think you're inspirational?
No.
No?
No.
I'm inspired by you.
Well, thanks.
Come on, man. You're a good dad? Let me tell you what John did last night.
Ooh.
John, you knew you were in for a long night. You did not know how long the night was going to get. John did a little thing called buy tickets 3 months out for Taylor Swift for his daughter and his wife.
Yeah.
And not cheap. He told me the amount. I'm not going to say it on the air because it's an embarrassing amount.
I'm embarrassed. And now you've said that, people know I should be embarrassed.
Like,
but
one,
that's okay.
Like one time I had a comedy bit that was based in reality, and it was about my dogs and how I spent $2,500 on each knee of my dog that was a rescue dog because he blew out his ACLs. And he blew out one. I fixed it. He blew out the other. And I said, it was $2,500, blah, blah, blah. And I told this story to Martin. I go, I'm trying to make this into a bit about why I need the money to do comedy because blah, blah, blah. And then he goes, is that real? I go, yeah. He goes, please don't tell anybody you spent. He goes, you already don't have kids. People are not going to understand.
Right.
That I go, well, dog owners get it. He goes,
no.
He goes, say 700. Say... Wow. Say any other amount than $2,500 each knee.
Per knee.
Per knee.
Oh, so you spent.
So over the course, it was over the course of like 3 years.
Well, if you spread out $5,000 over 3 years.
That's still a lot.
That's a really bad payout from an injury attorney.
Yeah,
but
it's bad.
But
but all that said, this is how you're like, John, please don't tell any.
Ugh.
But all that said, John went, he goes, I'll drop the girls off. I go, why didn't you go? You're the biggest Taylor Swift fan I know other than your daughter. He goes, well, I didn't want to get a third ticket. I go, they were that much? He goes, oh, yeah. So he drops them off. You texted me because I go, this is the big night. You go, yeah, I'm in for a long night. I'm going to camp out at a restaurant or something downtown. Because you knew not to go back home and then try to get back in the fray.
Right.
Because if you didn't know this, 180,000 people came to see Taylor Swift this weekend. Over the course of three nights.
At Titan or Nissan
and weather Titan. Weather was a risk all three nights.
Right.
There was fear of it because it's Tennessee and you just never know what's going to blow up. But they were predicting some chance of rain and even some lightning. So it's already just a nightmare. Just the idea of putting that much money out there. And if she put money out there too, come on, T Swift. Oh, she's got risk incurred.
Oh, yeah.
But you just thought, I'll camp out at this restaurant, I'll get some writing done.
Which I did.
Then I'll pick up the girls at 11 o'clock, 11:30.
There we go.
Easy peasy, beautiful.
Bob's your uncle.
But what happened was not that.
No, it was not. And I believe Sunday, which is when we went, Sunday was the least amount of weather chances.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know
earlier
that.
In the week.
They felt most confident.
It was
like
30% or something. Mm-hmm. And guys, let me tell you something. I've always said that we're one in a million. In our family.
Right.
But whatever the percentages were,
were one in three. You chose the one in three nights that was the...
Yeah, we blew those odds out of the water.
Yeah.
So, there's a lot of water.
So much water.
A lot of water. And the deal is, they'll do the concert in rain.
Yes.
But not in lightning. Mm. And so the rule is, you can't have lightning within 8 miles of the stadium for 30 minutes.
They call it the M&M rule.
Do they?
Yeah, because of 8 Mile.
Sorry,
you know, listen.
I was really slow in that.
Because it's like the music and the moment. She wanted it. You better never let it go. You only get. Okay, go ahead.
I do get hyped to that song. I don't care. It doesn't matter if you hear that song.
You can't. It's
like
it's
I could be going to preach and listen to that.
It's
song.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
It's a perfect song.
Yeah.
It's like. Even if you've had a good life, you can pace around and be like, they don't know what I got.
See this? I got mom's spaghetti right here on my shirt.
Uh-huh.
And I got up there and blew it and had to go back.
And you're like,
lab.
Aren't you a trust fund kid? They go, yeah, but you don't know.
Mom makes great spaghetti.
She makes amazing. Well, our maid.
Right.
Our chef.
Jeeves made the spaghetti.
He made the spaghetti. Jeeves spaghetti is a different. Anyway, so 8 miles is the rule, right? It's the circumference of the...
Yeah, that's like Nissan Stadium.
The danger zone.
Yeah. So like literally I drop the girls off. It's kind of raining. They're going to walk in the stadium. I go find my spot, which is Pinewood Social, which is a really great
place to
be. I got my good seat there, which is away from the tables. So you can kind of hang out all night. And man, I'm watching the radar and they get in there.
Mm-hmm.
And like within 30 minutes, they move them all to the concourses. And this is where things got bad.
This is that Titans football stadium, by the way. So it's 80,000. Or
well,
60,000 seats.
But there's 70 coming to the shows.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they set the record the two nights before it's 70.
Oh, because they're letting people on the field.
Which means 210,000 people
it's nuts.
Or so came
just
over the course
nuts.
Of the weekend. And literally, they push them like sardines into this concourse. Mm-hmm. And for the next 3.5 to 4 hours,
yeah,
it was just bedlam.
Teenage girls and their parents are weeping openly.
They have ponchos on, but they're like, of course, everyone's wearing cowboy boots and stuff. Their boots are filling up. The ponchos, just the water's just running off because it's coming in where they are.
Which sounds like a country song. My boots are filling up.
Anyway, like you can't. They couldn't get to the bathrooms because no one could move.
I bet some people made their own. Let me just say.
I don't know what you're going to do for that amount of time.
Well.
And Laura was like texting me.
They fill up their boots is what happens.
She's texting me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm freaking out a little bit because it's a very helpless situation.
Yeah, because you're thinking, let me ask you, let's triage it and be honest.
Okay.
Was there the expense incurred? That's one thing.
Okay.
And then there's my teenage daughter is completely disappointed, uh-huh. and this night could be ruined for uh-huh. her. Is it 1 and 1A? Is it like one is way far down the list? I want you to be honest with me.
I think a question of that level of honesty probably would take me just a second to think about.
Okay.
So why don't we just take a break
sure.
to hear from a few of our sponsors. Honestly?
Yeah.
You want real honesty?
I do.
The daughter's experience, because here's is number one.
Right. Because the money's gone.
Right. The money's gone. And
now it's about like...
The money already proved...
The money was for the experience.
Correct. The money proves that I cared that much more about the daughter's experience, right?
Yes.
But the fact that the money is spent, mm-hmm. and like we're just... Laura and I at one point are like, okay, guys, just text that you're going to reschedule or that there's a refund. Like we need one of those two things.
Right.
Like, but I was thinking, how do you reschedule? Remember where Garth Brooks had to cancel?
Mm-hmm. Nightmare.
Like, you can. I read the article on it while I was sitting there, because I'm literally firing. My daughter is texting me, like, nonstop. She's like, this is now the worst night ever.
Oh.
You know, she's low. Laura's like, there's a grown woman laying in the floor sobbing next to me.
Right.
People are having panic attacks. We're freezing. Our feet are soaking wet. We're cold.
Yeah. Nobody has food.
And I'm sitting, you know, I guess half a mile away or less. Right. And the lightning is flashing. And every time the lightning flashes, I'm like, we just lost 30 more minutes.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I'm now watching this radar like an amateur meteorologist would do. And I'm sending her screenshots because she doesn't have a good enough internet there. Like, here's where I see. I think by 7:15 you might see it. And then this storm just kept creeping south.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Like, I'm praying.
And it's just hovering over the stadium, too. It's
and
not
she's
moving
like,
fast.
My back is killing me. We're standing here. We can't move. Sadie is in tears, you know, but she's holding it together pretty good. But there's girls crying everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, how could you not?
Yeah.
That would make me cry.
It's awful. I mean, it's an awful situation. Yeah. And they're just very uncomfortable. And everything. I was like, this is not.
And you can't leave even if you wanted to. You can't get to the bathroom.
They're not
going to
let them out because they're on shelter in place.
Somebody told me that they told people to stay in their cars. If you were coming from your car, stay in your car. And then I heard that some people did leave and could not get back in.
Which I can't understand, because if you still had a ticket on your phone.
I don't know. Maybe that's just Twitter nonsense, but I just read it somewhere.
Well, I was figuring, and Andrew and I were texting back, because you were texting me, Andrew was texting me, people were like, what is going on?
Well, I was worried about Sadie and Laura's, because I was like, immediately my heart went out. I was like, this would be awful.
I mean, we've been listening to T-Swift a lot. Like, this has been a big thing. And
Would you consider yourself a Swiftie,
Charlie? I'm an admirer.
Are you in the Swift army?
I would say... that this was, I'm not going to be, I don't think that this is histrionics to say this, Johnny.
Okay.
I think that this concert was probably the concert of the decade in Nashville.
Maybe.
And the reason I say that is... She set the record. She's the first artist to ever sell out Nissan Stadium three nights in a row.
And she doesn't tour every year.
It's been 5 years since her last tour.
So there's a scarcity.
Right. And she's doing, it's the Eras tour.
And now she owns her mat, like she's out from under the bad deal.
Right.
So this is her big, like, coming out party.
And literally, she's doing a 45-song set. I mean, she is doing major tracks from every record. So it's kind of the big walk through your, you know, whole discography kind of thing.
Right. Surprise guest, because it's Nashville. She can get anybody she wants.
Yep. And my kid's 14 only once.
Right.
And that's what I thought. I was like... The reason I say the decade, if this happens again, let's just say if it follows the same, Sadie would be 19.
Yeah.
And You'll Never Be 14 Again whenever you, this was your favorite.
This sounds like a Taylor Swift song.
It really does.
You'll Never Be 14 Again.
Her song 15 really is. She has a song called 15 and a song called 22. And they're both, for those of us who have been through those ages, they're really good. Like, oh yeah, like good reflections. But anywho, so yeah, it was about my kid and the experience and about my wife who is like.
But you're also in your mind going, we're going to have to do this again. You're already looking at going on the road and doing this again. Like, where is she going to be next?
In the hopes of a refund.
I got to load the car up.
In the hopes of a refund. Although I was thinking they
would do it without a refund.
You know,
though,
they had 50 tractor trailers and like 25 flatbeds just to get the stage in. And
that is 48 more than I use for my show.
And the deal was.
My two are just snacks.
Yeah, you can't. They're
just full of Funyuns.
Just snacks and Funyuns. But the deal is, I was thinking, these are already here. The gas money's already been spent. Like, the crew's already hired. You can't just give the refund.
Yeah. It's a crazy experience. It's a crazy like situation. There's no winning. Like, to cancel it, you know they didn't want to cancel it either.
No.
They were like, if we have to go on at midnight, we will. And so then.
Her thing, by the way.
So it went from a late night to, like, I kept texting you. Well, we knew it was going to be a late night. This is going to be, do you still want to record tomorrow? Because you're going to be fried.
Yeah.
I said, you're not going to get home till 4 a.m.
No. And again, part of this, Laura and I are very partnership in parenting.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I'm
against that. A lot of people say that's the way you should do it.
And you've always said
that. I'm like, one person should be the like completely overbearing.
Right.
The fist.
And the other...
The iron fist. The other should cower and be the doormat. And I've chosen that role.
Well, I mean, it suits you well.
Okay, go ahead, though.
It does.
Go ahead and pat yourself on the back for being in a partnership marriage again.
No, I'm patting my wife on the back.
Okay.
Yeah, I appreciate that, though. Like, this... She's in there suffering.
Yes.
And I'm sitting in a really nice coffee shop. And then two other guys. So, Katie...
Like, can you warm this up for me,
please? Oh, burnt myself. Aaron... You know Aaron and his wife Katie. Katie works on staff, and Aaron's our pastor's youngest son. And then you have Jake and Abby, who's our Jake's our youth pastor, and Abby's our girls director, creative director, worship director. Like, she's, you know, the final family. So Katie and Abby are stuck inside too.
Mm-hmm.
And so the guys, they knew I was working because I talked to them earlier that day. They're like, "Hey, are you still at Pinewood?" I was like, "Yeah." How would you feel about a couple of young adults coming and hanging out? I was like, "Dude, come on!" So we're sitting there. We ordered. They're having French fries. We had some wings.
You did a devotional.
Well, you know, we're enjoying ourselves.
Did some Alleluia groups.
Clinking glasses. You know what I'm saying?
That's fine.
Like, everything's great.
Because you're not stuck in it.
And we feel awful. But I really am, like, anxious, very anxious. And very, like, oh, my wife is having to suffer without, like, if someone's going to suffer, we should do it together. That really is that feeling.
Right.
So, yes, they finally let him in. Concert started. All was well.
Uh-huh.
It redeemed things. So it kept raining all night. So then we went and drove around the stadium because we shut down that restaurant at 11. Drove around the stadium trying to figure out our exit strategies.
Yeah.
You know, Johnny, I bet you there were 5,000 people outside the stadium listening on three different bridges across the river. And then some people were just standing. Like, I saw this group of 500 people or so just standing, like, oddly. Like, there was no marking. They were just standing in this sidewalk. And I realized that was the spot they could see through and see the screen in its fullness. And we saw the screen some. And the security, we noticed, like, as long as you're just walking, they, you know, you could go anywhere you want except in.
Yeah.
Boy, that'll preach.
Mm-hmm. Some of y'all are just standing hoping you can just catch a glimpse.
Yeah.
When all you had to do was buy a ticket and you could have got to.
All you had to do was stay in motion and act like you belong.
Hold on.
Just act.
Just walk confidently through security.
Just like Jesus did.
Yeah.
Wait. Like, we literally stood there for a minute looking through, and they finally were like, all right, get out of here. It was 12:30 at that point. I was like, oh, yeah, but God forbid that we have some joy at 12:30 at night. Like,
yeah,
I was.
That's true. Keep it moving, folks.
Don't you stand here and listen to this concert that you didn't pay for.
Right.
It's like,
Yeah.
I can't believe they said that. There were ladies who stood there and just fought with security guards because they insisted. And the security guards yelling at them, like, ma'am, you cannot stand here. And she, I don't know what she was saying. I was like, hey.
It is interesting to tell people they can't stand on a city street.
Well, it's the sidewalk outside the stadium.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming it's still the stadium property all the way through the parking lot.
Wow.
I don't know. I know we saw a lot because we just kept circling. Mm-hmm. And guys, isn't that just like our lives? Sometimes you just got to keep circling.
You didn't need to buy that third ticket.
I didn't need the third ticket. The third ticket was in the experience that I had.
Well, and then you say Sadie basically filmed the whole thing with her phone. Did she enjoy the show? Like, it's so odd to me that people like film things, and I'm like, I want people to be more present.
She had that realization. She goes, first of all, she thought, well, first of all, the camera's going to be shaky because I wasn't paying attention all the time. I was like, honey, it doesn't matter. You were there.
Yeah.
And then she goes, you know, I should have filmed less, so I'd have been more present. I think she actually said that.
Wow, she's...
And I was like, honey, it's okay. Everybody was filming it. Like, you know, there's that evaluation of whether you did the concert right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's really not... The concert was what it was. You know what I'm saying? Like, let it be what it is. But I get that. They did the songs. Of course, we're listening and we're following the set list. I'm going, okay, we're at song... I remember we're like, okay, we're at song 20.
Oh, you already knew the set list.
Yeah, the set list is out because she's done a bunch of these.
Yeah.
So it's like, we're at song 20 out of 45.
Unbelievable.
And it's like 12:30 at night or 12:30 in the morning. So we walked to the 7-Eleven right there. That was an experience.
Yeah.
Lots of interesting people hanging out in downtown Nashville at that time.
Yeah. Well, that's what they think of you. They're like, look at this weirdo.
Look at this guy. What's going on? And then... We kind of got into one of the lots somehow without someone seeing us, and we were able to get the girls into the car, but we had to wait. So you called it.
Yeah.
When I went to bed, it was 4 a.m.
Man.
Last night. And we had a friend.
What's the latest? That's the latest you've gone to bed in 15 years.
That'll be since probably youth pastor days of a lock-in where I didn't go to bed at all.
Yeah.
I can't, so this I can't is not, think of you're another not, time.
Because you even said, no, we'll still meet at 11 because like... Even if I go to bed late, like, I can't sleep in. I go, okay, so I text you at 10. I go, we still meeting at 11 a.m.? You go, can we push it to 1? I read that into your text. Can we push it? You care if we?
Oh, that was right. It's dead on. Although I wasn't able to go back to sleep, I could have got up then. I was up at 10.
You were just haggard.
I was the one up first, because Laura usually can't go to sleep, so she's probably up later than me. But and then, of course, when Sadie did get up, it was awesome. We set out on the deck by the fire because it was a little cool this morning.
Yeah.
And just watched all of her videos from last night. So I like basically relived the whole concert, and she was talking me through it, you know. And but it was redeemed, and I'm very grateful. I'm like, for real, I was praying like, man, if possible, could we just do this concert? And by the way, there was still lightning in the area for sure because we were out there.
They just didn't. They were like, to me, when I heard that, I was like, there'll be another pocket of storms, and they've got people back in their seats now. It's almost like if we had a second pandemic, they'd be like, there's no way these people are going to ever wear masks again.
Yeah, we're
like,
not doing this.
We ruined it. Nobody's doing anything. We're like, already did it. Bring on the show.
Sorry. Yeah, it was... I'm telling you, man, it was an experience.
Well, now they got a great story.
Yeah.
They suffered for their Taylor Swift experience.
Yeah.
You suffered with what you paid, but I'm saying like the other people who attended on Friday and Saturday night, they just got like the, it was awesome.
Oh, my goodness.
We had to go down and get our seats, and like a hot dog was $20.
Woo.
They had to stand in the rain next to like huddled masses of weeping people for 4 hours.
Yeah.
They put in some work.
They did.
For their T-Swift experience.
And I will say this, and I don't want to get anybody in trouble.
Oh, okay.
But they may or may not, in the middle of all that, have walked down to a much lower section, and security just didn't care.
Do you think some people had left those seats?
I don't know. But I know this, they were down much lower than the tickets we bought, and security was great with it, and so they got really great view of the con. That they were.
So you're saying that people should break the rules...
I'm saying, guys, when you see a rule that there may be a time, I think it's Ecclesiastes that says there's a time for everything.
Right.
There's a time to keep the rules. There's a time to break the rules.
I don't think
it's right there, guys. Solomon.
A time to embrace, a time to refrain from embracing.
A time to move from 300 to 100.
Are you an embracer?
Yeah.
Like with regular people? Like how long do you know somebody before you go, it's time to bring it in for the real thing?
I'll hug somebody within three
times.
If we've hung out for three times, I could do it. Now, it might be a, not a full handshake, but like a thumb over thumb kind of, hey, bro, kind of thing.
Even people that I know well, I find myself doing the handshake and then pulling them immediately.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. Pull them in.
Yeah.
And then a little like double pat on the back
kind
of thing. I mean, the scriptural.
Right.
mean, technically you're supposed to kiss them if you're going to be really scriptural, but
okay,
I don't do that.
Yeah, that's probably Europeans.
They
probably
still do
this kiss on the cheek more, or kiss on the lips.
Our friend Pastor Ed from South America, he would give you kisses on the cheek.
Okay,
yeah, it was very sweet. You know what I'm saying? Like it's I appreciated the affection. I do think Americans are weirded out by affection in a possibly unhealthy way.
Yeah.
There's a standoffishness. Standoffishness, if you will.
Right.
To it. See, I'm a hugger.
Yeah, I mean, I was a mama's boy. She was one of those people that always just say, like, I'm a hugger, like to somebody that she'd just met.
Yeah.
Like she would refuse the handshake or the whatever. She'd be offended by a fist bump. I don't know if she lived long enough to be fist bumps to be prevalent.
Yeah. I would have loved to hear what your mom said about fist bumps.
Yeah. She had a very strong stance about these kind of greetings.
I would have loved it, actually.
She had a very important paper that she wrote about.
What publication?
About side hugs. She thought the side hug was a gateway hug.
Mm.
You know, it leads to other things.
Yeah,
at least she was like, hugs. Yeah, you're hugging now, side, but then what?
What happens next?
Be careful out there.
Right. The first side hug's probably free.
Yeah.
After that, you're caught, bro.
You're caught in a trap.
I've seen it. This is the one time I've seen it.
Yes. But, it's the only time. It's never happened.
Yeah.
But.
It was a good weekend, and it followed a week in Dallas. So me and several staff members were in
the Big D
in Dallas for.
Some people think Detroit is the Big D.
Mm-mm. I mean, it's another city that starts with D that's large, but
yes,
I think technically there was a song.
Right, we talked about that.
That I hate, and our friend Weston, who passed away, he loved to torture me with the song.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think going through the Big D, you don't mean Dallas. I can't believe what the judge had to tell us is just.
Uh-huh.
An affront to songwriting. Yes. And there's jealousy and envy because someone's house is paid off 10 times over from that bad line. And maybe they're listening right now, laughing.
That's
like, jokes on you, sucker.
Yeah, they don't care.
But anyway, he just loved it. So, but I did go to the Big D, and I do mean Dallas.
Yes.
And it was awesome. We had a really good time.
So many friends in Dallas over the years that have brought me to do things at their church. And
you were just there the week before me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I could still feel the reverberations in the town.
I made an impact.
The city was a buzz. You know what I'm saying? There was a...
Yeah.
Yeah, an electricity.
I did a men's conference for Gateway Church there in Dallas, one of the larger churches in Dallas. And they've always been so good to me, and it's always fun to go back.
I've always thought of Gateway Church as like a gateway
church. It's a gateway. It's more of a... you're going to enjoy your next church.
Right, it gets you going. Have you made that joke there?
No, I need to.
That's
you're right.
Good.
That's good. I feel like this is more of a gateway church.
Like, I don't plan on staying.
Yeah. But it kind of demystified church me. I was like, okay, church. Okay, yeah. Cool. Yeah. And now I'm looking
right
for my next church.
Do you guys
Gateway.
Do you validate parking?
Yeah. Can I?
Is that you probably have to ride a tram in their parking lot there, I'm assuming.
It's big. I didn't because I'm the talent.
Right. They bring you right up.
They did. They pull. There's like security guys that pull. I feel bad because they know what car to look for. They're told in advance.
Oh, wow. Really?
They pull
even
a cone.
Even it's a rental?
Yeah. They like, what are you driving? And then I told them and they were like, oh. And they pull a cone and I pull up to the thing. And then there's a guy that comes out and walks you in. It's a lot.
Oh, I've been there with you.
If security people.
I don't remember how we got in.
Like I kept walking away from the security guys because I would go back and forth to my table to greet people and like shake hands and stuff.
They didn't like that.
No, they were like, we're going to put an ankle monitor on you.
Oh.
Because you keep walking out without us. They were like laughing about it there. I was like, I just don't, I'm not used to this. I don't.
Yeah.
I didn't get into this to get away from people. So I like being around. I'm not afraid for, I mean, I know you got to, whatever.
Right.
And there's some people who I guess that they work with that they don't want to get caught in a 2-hour conversation with somebody.
Yeah.
But that's just, I'm not that, I like when people come and talk to me.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes if somebody comes up and they're like, I got one for you.
Uh-huh.
And you're like, okay, I'll sure. And sometimes it's really funny. Most of the time it's super racist. And you're like, I don't like I don't like this joke, Pastor.
Security?
Could you?
Pastor.
Yeah. But sometimes they'll tell me a joke and be like, that's a hysterical joke.
Do you often recognize the joke from someone else?
Yeah, or I'll say that's a street joke or it's a joke, you know, it's a joke book joke that they're telling.
Yeah.
But sometimes I'll be like, that's Ken Davis or that's Tim Hawkins or that guy. I know that guy. I worked with that guy on the road. Sometimes I'll know or, it's, you know, I know a lot of comedy just because it's the language of my childhood is knowing those bits and like memorizing them and saying them at the eighth grade lunch table. So it's easy for me to remember if somebody's telling a joke that I recognize. Stephen Wright. So I did this joke in my show and I credited Stephen Wright because I was talking about how I have a dark sense of humor, even though I do comedy in churches a lot. And I was said that Stephen Wright, who was a hero of mine as a kid, and people were clapping in the audience because it was an older, a little bit older crowd, a middle-aged to older crowd. And I said, he was on a talk show recently and they asked him what his favorite joke that he'd ever written was. And I said, it was kind of an unexpected joke for me. I don't think I remembered him ever telling it, but it made me laugh so hard because I love dark humor. And I told the joke and this was the joke. He said, I guess it's a true story. He said, when I was a teenager, my father died. And he said, I went to the funeral and it was an open casket. And I was looking at my father in the casket. It was such a strange sight. And I started thinking things in my head. And he goes, and for some reason, I started thinking of my flashlight. And then I started thinking about like the batteries in my flashlight. And then I started thinking, maybe he isn't dead. Maybe he's just in the wrong way. And that's such a, like a really dark joke. It's like your dark. Dad's the battery in the, in the casket.
In the casket.
And it made flashlight. Me, and when I heard a comedian, when I've ever told that joke to comedians, they really laugh.
Oh yeah.
But the audience that I told that that's joke did not laugh. It was too dark for them even. And here's this guy who's written a million jokes and that was his favorite. And it was, it's this weird true thing that he probably,
it's
just
probably
wrote
connected
it.
To his grief somehow in a way that
he was a response to his grief to think maybe, cause when he says maybe dad's not dead, you just go, oh, wow, where's he going with this? Some spiritual place?
No.
Maybe he's just in the wrong way. And I'm like, it made me laugh so hard, and the audience did not laugh.
Well, you've, like, when you told it, I was like, should I laugh?
Yeah. Like, it feels like one of those situations, right.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's the kind of thing. I like stuff like that because death scares us. Grief scares us. For some comics, they talk about race because race is this prickly thing that scares people. And delineations between people groups scare us. So comics poke holes in that stuff because it scares them too, maybe.
Yeah.
Or they enjoy that riding that third rail.
Right.
They want to just see if they can like poke at the third rail of that subject matter. I think there's a time and a place for it, but it was interesting. And this place I was at, by the way, Lincoln, Illinois, John, they were interesting because the city's very interesting.
Yeah.
I need to look it up and like confirm the whole story because you're a history guy. You would be fascinated by it. They have it was the courthouse maybe? We're standing in the town square. It's the traditional town square of these old Midwest towns where nothing's changed in 100 years.
Yeah.
It looked like the Back to the Future town square.
Yeah.
The theater, the soda jerk, the whatever, all of it's still there. It's all run down or whatever, or just less, more dilapidated. But, and they had the courthouse that looked like the Save the Clock Tower courthouse. They had the whatever. They had a fire hall that originally, like until like 50 years ago, was horse-drawn carriages fire hall.
Wow.
Roll up doors and then here come the horse-drawn, you know, water tanks. So, on top of the city hall, I believe it was the city hall or the courthouse, he goes, look at that thing up there. And I took a picture with my phone. I'll send you the text of it. It is a glass phone booth on top of this building. And I go, what's going on there? They go, we have really bad weather that would blow through here. And that's the highest point in the town. So you'd have like the unmarried person who lost the short straw that night would be the guy who would have to go and watch for the bad weather that's blowing in so he can warn the town. This up to like a couple of generations ago, this was the policy. And then they decided, well, this guy's in harm's way. Let's put a phone booth up there.
A phone booth has metal though.
So he's up there in this glass phone booth and there's a phone and he goes, the tornado is 30 clicks away or whatever. And that was how they did it. And the phone booth is still there as like this, you know, landmark for that person.
It's not aesthetically pleasing.
It's not. And I said, and so I talked about it in the show. I was like, do you guys even understand how lightning works?
You know? Right.
Like, I said, that is not like, not only, that's not a hero. That's your sacrificial lamb.
Right. It's like throwing someone into the volcano.
It is. Yeah. It's exactly that. But that was the thing. And so it's still there. And so people come. They're on Route 66. That's the other thing about that town. It's on Route 66, which is the famous, you know, across if you're crossing the country. And it's the big photo op of you got to see the phone booth on top of the building in Lincoln, Illinois.
Wow.
And, of course, it's named after Abe Lincoln because it's land of Lincoln. Illinois takes a lot of credit for Lincoln's upbringing, even though he was born in Hodgenville, Kentucky.
Mm.
But Lincoln claims him because his childhood and early political career. But so they had this gift, this kind of, what I was always saying, like church can be kind of quirky, you know, and they want to be fun too. And these were fun people. They had a little gift bag for me. And the gift bag, for whatever reason, said happy birthday. I think that's what they could find.
Okay.
So, okay, happy birthday. They're like, I had a birthday balloon coming off the top. The balloon said, it's a boy, which I thought,
oh,
added weirdness.
Yeah.
Again, all I mean, in fun.
Not
fun
inaccurate.
People. No.
You're a boy.
True. And so I was like, I didn't look until like the opener was on stage. My friend Michelle had been commissioned to open the show. And I was like, oh, this is so cool. I'll get to hang out with her. So she's on stage. I'm listening to her. Then I go, I'm going to go check out this bag. I look in the bag. There's a felt top hat.
Okay.
I thought, all right, little Lincoln. A felt beard. All right, cool, cool, cool. There's some other weird knickknacks and candies and things. All right, very nice.
All of this meeting a felt need, if you will.
Yes, a felt need of mine. I reach in. There's a tintype kind of black and white photo of not Abe Lincoln. I'm like, I've seen this guy. I think I know who this is. No, it can't be.
Stephen Douglas.
I said, this can't be who I think it is. The next day, I didn't think about it again. I just put everything back in the bag, and I'm driving home. I get a text from the guy who hosted the show. Thanks for coming. Man, you really killed. And it was a text of that photo. It was that same photo.
Okay.
And it said, you really owned Lincoln last night. That's why I sent you this.
No, they did not send you John Wilkes Booth.
John Wilkes Booth was in my gift bag.
No.
A photo of John Wilkes Booth because I killed in Lincoln.
Johnny, I think it's a little soon.
I think it's probably
too soon.
And yet they didn't laugh at my Stephen Wright. Maybe he's in the wrong way.
Hypocrites.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's probably the weirdest gift bag I've ever gotten. I've gotten some cool things. And listen, I'm going to cherish it.
Listen, I appreciate the creativity.
I'm going to frame it. It's going in my...
I
don't know.
I don't think you're going to...
No, probably not.
Yeah.
But
interesting.
It was fun, and they were great. We sold it out, John. We sold out the show.
Hey, all right. I thought you sold out a long time ago.
I'm starting to move a little... Well, listen. These Lincoln folks, they were ready for me. It was good.
Mm.
Wow. Oh, by the way, if you're interested in such a thing, I've got some shows coming up this weekend, because I know this will publish today. This Friday and Saturday, I'm in Fishers, Indiana, which is near Indianapolis, at Fishers Comedy Magic Club, Friday and Saturday. Those are going to be great. I'm also on the Bob and Tom show that morning, so that's a big like syndicated radio show. And they have comedians on from time to time. And they've been doing it for over 30 years, and I was asked to be on the show, so I'm going to be on that. So listen for that. I think you can watch it on YouTube live Friday morning, the Bob and Tom show. So check that out. I think I'm on there between 8 and 9 Central.
Maybe is this Eastern. Information on your website?
It is, but the Bob and Tom's not. I just wanted to let people know. But yes, and then Brilliant, Wisconsin, the following week. Get tickets at johnnyw.com.
That's J-O-N-N-I-E, by the way.
J-O-N-N-I-E.
Yeah, N-N.
W.com.
It's a...
Two N's.
Yeah.
No H.
Yeah. No H.
But yeah, so cool things coming up, and I'm excited.
It's very exciting. Well, I'm glad to... I'm going to be... processing the gift bag for a while.
It was something.
I'm in process.
It's like, remember I told the story of me getting the text that said there'll be a maroon Oldsmobile 98 coming to pick you up, and I was half asleep from my hotel nap, and I said, no, great, no cops or the girl died. I thought it was just so funny to say, like,
yeah,
there'll be a man in a coat coming to get you or whatever. And then the guy did not respond. He was just like freaked out by my text. He was just like, no, and it made me like, am I offending? I think they took a risk with that gift bag.
Yeah, I respect the
risk. And I'm giving them credit for going out on a limb.
And I think about that, like, even in like my spiritual therapy journey, like, I have a tendency after I've said or done something, number one, I have this shame spiral.
Right.
Like, if I share, like, I had a conversation with a good friend who's on staff at the conference where we are, the church. Spent a lot of time, shared a lot of things, and immediately afterwards, I'm shame spiraling of, oh, I shared too much.
Yeah.
I was all over the place. He's going to think this. he's going to think I'm a this, you know. And then that's just, I don't know how many other people deal with that. I think my spiritual walk, again, going to a, hey, there's a lot of reminders like, hey, that guy's probably not thinking about you.
Yeah.
At all.
You're centering yourself again. Right. When you think that the world revolves around.
Usually. I mean, even if you did say something dumb, most people, sometimes I go back to try to make something right. They're like, I don't even remember you saying that. Or they're like, I didn't take it that way. Or occasionally they're like, thanks. No, that helps to understand, you know. But there has to be, I'm trying to be that guy who's a little more secure. Like, hey, just let it ride.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just be who you are and understand that this one interaction or this one thing, even if, you know, it's not going to define you, you know. Whatever that need is. So, yeah, I respect when someone says, I'm taking a chance. They're obviously trying to be funny with a comedian. And it was witty. I'll say that.
Mm-hmm.
It's witty. But I just, yeah.
It's edgy.
It is edgy. That's a great word.
It's out there.
Yeah, I just don't, yeah. But I'm glad that they're okay. I think it's like, I don't want to be okay with myself if I shouldn't be okay with myself. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd share some stuff with you at lunch today. I was like, hey.
I said, please don't share that with anybody.
Please stop. this is too much. But when we got here, I was like, hey, by the way, seriously, though, if you see me falling into that mindset or whatever, because I think there's some things that are changing. And I think it's just community and accountability and all those things.
Right.
Like, hey, tell me and be on the lookout. So I'm inviting that. But at the same time, I can go too far and be like, that's all I do is seek after finding out whether or not what I said or what I'm thinking is okay. So
there's
to be some balance there. So, hey, maybe it's just okay. We just let it ride.
Sometimes, John, there's patterns in your past and you got to like keep being like, we're a new creation. So we got to keep like reinventing and renewing. We're allowing God to renew us. But sometimes it's good to look back at the past.
Oh.
In a good way.
Oh, you mean like,
because we can learn from it.
That's just so unexpected.
Yeah.
I didn't know we would make such a...
It reminds me of a segment that we do from time to time every week on the show. A segment where we look back at this week in history. It's called Talk About Then. President Harry S. Truman, born this week, 1884.
Oh, wow.
Did you know that? Died 1972. American politician, 33rd U.S. president, John, and 34th U.S. vice president, which I did not know that.
Well, yeah, he was FDR's vice president when he died in office. So that's how true.
That's right. Okay, I'm seeing this now. The thing that was interesting to me about this is I've always heard that the S in his name did not stand for anything. Did you know? You've heard this, right?
I have heard this.
But that's not all the way true. It did not stand for any one name. The reason it was never spelled out is because the middle initial S was chosen to honor both of his grandfathers, Anderson Ship Truman and Solomon Young.
Huh.
So he was trying to just be like, I don't want to say
it stands for... I don't want to pick between grandpas.
I got two S's that I want to honor. And there you go. Solomon and Ship.
And during that time, you would not want to be called Harry S.S. Truman.
No.
No.
That wasn't...
That would have been bad.
Which brings me to my next... this day and this week in history.
Right.
May 8th, 1945, British and Americans celebrate Germany's unconditional surrender the previous day. VE Day.
Victory in Europe Day. I forgot about that.
Yep. Good stuff, man.
We tend to remember D-Day more,
June
6th, and we obviously remember Pearl Harbor.
Right.
But I think that's December 7th. But yeah, VE Day, what a day, man. Pretty important day.
It was. We might all be speaking German otherwise, right? Isn't that what people used to say?
That's what I say. I don't know if anyone else does.
You can speak German if you just have to take the courses.
You still can, right? They're not prohibiting you from doing it.
Right.
You have to go get the Babbel app.
You have to pay.
Right. But as opposed to being forced into it, yes.
That's different. Those are different things. Let's see. Coca-Cola was invented 1886 this week, John. The soft drink Coca-Cola is invented by John S. Pemberton. I don't know what his S stood for. Doesn't say. Hmm. He called it esteemed brain tonic and intellectual beverage.
That was what
the original name of Coca-Cola was.
It's a good change.
Yeah,
they shortened it.
Somebody got a brand. Some brand person, yeah.
It's interesting if you watch those Food That Built America's, almost all of those kinds of things, like even peanut butter, we were watching on peanut butter last night, it all started as a health...
Mm-hmm.
Like some sort of remedy.
Right.
Some sort of...
You see it now still happening. There's still some of that where it's clearly just like, I'll see things and I'll be like, it'll say gluten free. And I'm like, yeah, but there's not gluten in the regular version of this. It's a bottle of water.
Right.
You're just trying to make it seem healthier than it is. It's a brand trick people have been doing for years. But yeah, originally called Esteemed Brain Tonic and Intellectual Beverage, which really is overselling what Coca-Cola is anyway. I've never thought of it as an esteemed brain tonic.
I mean, even if it was a brain tonic, what makes it esteemed? I mean, that's...
And why is it an intellectual beverage?
Right.
I don't know.
They do say...
I think when I order a soda, people judge me.
You think?
Especially if I'm in like a place where people are drinking, like, either they're getting like an alcoholic beverage with drink,
yeah,
or with their meal, and they're getting like a, you know, what they're doing, whatever. And then I go, can I get a Diet Coke? They look at me like, either like, I'm a recovering alcoholic.
Right.
And this is why I have to have soda. I can't be a grown-up tonight, guys. Or they just look at me like I'm 7.
Like you're missing out.
You're drinking soda?
Right.
I like soda. It's an intellectual beverage to me.
You want to bring you some chicken nuggets, too, while we're at it there?
Yeah. Or coffee's a big one. Like, people drink coffee, and I don't drink coffee, and so they look at me like I'm an idiot, because I have soda at, like, 8 in the morning.
I look at you like that every time that I drink coffee, and you don't, because I still can't figure it out.
John Pemberton had previously created an opium-free pain relief medicine to alleviate his addiction to morphine. I did not know this. I knew that it was originally had drugs in it and that it was originally a cure for the common cold or something. But I did not know he had created an opium-free pain relief medicine to alleviate his own addiction to morphine.
Wow.
Which started as a result of wounds received in 1865 fighting in the Civil War.
Wow.
This is a movie.
Wow.
The result was the very popular French wine coca, which was made from Peruvian coca wine and kola nut. In 1886, Atlanta and Fulton County passed prohibition legislation forcing him to make a non-alcoholic version in which he substituted the wine with syrup, called it Coca-Cola. While experimenting with the formula, he accidentally mixed the base with carbonated water. This is crazy. It's all accidental and all just happenstance, and all because of prohibition and people being like ultra puritanical.
This is 1880s something, though. So this is like citywide prohibition, not the prohibition.
He liked the results so much that he decided to make a fountain drink instead of a medicine. Nearly bankrupt and suffering health issues, Pemberton sold the rights to his business partner shortly before his death. He had wanted to retain a share of the ownership to leave to his son, but his son wanted the money instead. So it was like an Esau situation.
Wow.
So this guy could have had billions. The son was like, just give me the money. I don't want the shares of the...
Yeah.
So he was bought out. The original formula, which was created as an alternative to morphine, contained about 9 milligrams of cocaine per glass.
And it will make you feel better.
That is a typical line. A typical line of cocaine is 50 to 75 milligrams. So it was about... a fifth of a line of cocaine was in the glass of...
Interesting.
So it was not a marginal amount. This was...
No.
Cocaine was in the drink. This was reduced to trace amounts by the early 1900s and eliminated altogether in 1929. So...
It's a good year to get rid of cocaine.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stock market just crashed. You're going to want to...
Well, and it seems like... I don't know what the street value of cocaine is because I don't do drugs, but like...
Right,
it seems
like
it'd be an expensive,
Johnny's putting air
be an expensive
right
drink.
Yeah,
if you're going to keep cocaine in it.
Yeah.
Okay, here's one I did not know. Speaking of our friend Abe Lincoln, did you know that this week in 1858, Abraham Lincoln, as a lawyer, used the moon to defend a client? Do you know this story?
Used the moon.
In what is considered his most famous case, lawyer and future U.S. president, Abraham Lincoln, used the moon to defend Duff Armstrong, that sounds like a beer. It sounds like a brewery, who was accused of murdering James Preston Metzger on August 29th, 1857. Lincoln had been friends with Armstrong's recently deceased father and offered to defend him free of charge. So he takes this case pro bono. He goes into it and has his Perry Mason moment because Charles Allen testified at the trial that just before midnight, he saw Armstrong strike Metzger with a slung shot, a weight tied to a leather thong. I'm sure thong means something different in the 18.
Yeah.
Anyway, it must be like a mace. He's slinging it around. It's a slung shot. Anyway, I'm reading this from This Week in History. These are not made up facts. Allen claimed he was about 150 feet away at the time. When Lincoln asked Allen how he could identify Armstrong in the middle of the night from that distance, Allen claimed he could see by the light of the full moon. Lincoln then took out an almanac and showed that at the time of the murder, the moon was in its first quarter and riding low on the horizon and was just about to set. Lincoln claimed not only was the witness lying about the full moon, it would have been impossible to have enough moonlight to see clearly that night, thus proving he was lying. The jury agreed, acquitted Armstrong. The case became known as the Almanac Trial.
Wow.
So this is Perry Mason. He proved that his client was innocent.
Wow.
And it was this friend of his family, I guess. He'd taken the case for nothing. He probably rides the fame of that, you know, acquittal to political prestige.
And he probably knew about all the moon stuff because of his side work as a vampire slayer.
Yes.
Yes. Or hunter. Is that what they called him?
Yeah. You're right.
Interesting.
I did not know that. You're the big history guy. You didn't know this? Did you know that? I knew the part about Lincoln being undefeated as an amateur wrestler. Like, he was a pugilist.
So
he was a boxer and wrestler, and he was undefeated. Like, he was a hoss.
So
they called him. That's why they called him. What? No, that was, he wasn't the one they called. They called him something. He had a name. It wasn't Old Hickory. That was Andrew Jackson. But he was called something that was like, he's a tough son of a gun, kind of a nickname.
Old Cedar Ridge.
No, old teak.
I am.
He's waterproof.
He's totally waterproof. I am ashamed to say I have the Lincoln book.
Yeah.
By John Meacham.
It's a big one, though.
I haven't cracked it yet.
You skimmed
I'm reading
it.
Several others. There's a reason I haven't read it.
You got to break the spine of that thing. You know whose spine you couldn't break?
Abraham Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln. He'll stretch you out there. He'll put you in the camel clutch.
Ugh, that guy.
Mother's Day was established, John, this week, 1914.
Oh.
And I know you fought me about this. You're like, why? What's the big deal about their contributions?
I don't remember.
And I was like, John, this has been around for a long time. You're like, we got to get rid of Mother's Day.
I don't.
Haven't they taken enough glory on themselves? And I'm like, whoa, dude.
I can't believe we had that conversation. I mean,
it is weird.
Almost fantastic.
These are your words.
Right.
Moms must be stopped. No, it's great. And so congratulations to all the mothers. And we love you. And we're very proud. Although I do have that one video where it's like Mother's Day sermons versus Father's Day sermons.
Yes.
You know, you've seen that where it's like the Mother's Day sermon. Like, we just want to just give recognition to all the mothers. Can we have them stand? What would we do without you? And then you go to the Father's Day sermon. It's like, y'all need to step up. You're flaking out on your families. You have spiritual responsibility. Grow up, you know.
Happy Father's Day.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's kind of sad.
It's kind of
sad, but true. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we do want to give a shout out.
I have Mother's Day message this week.
Do you really?
Which we don't usually do a Mother's Day message, but
I think people have shied away from it too much that we overcorrect.
Well, I'm in a Proverbs series.
Yeah.
So I feel like it could, we could bring it in. We could bring them together.
Yes.
A little bit. You know what I'm saying?
See that you do.
Proverbs has a lot to say about moms.
I got one more for you, John. Hold on. This one's a good one.
The it man, better be good.
The man who lived through doomsday was not aware of this person. May 8th, 1902, a volcano outside the city of St. Pierre on Martinique Island erupts, killing almost all of the 30,000 inhabitants within a matter of minutes.
Oh, dear.
Ludger Silberis survived because he was locked in a prison in solitary confinement. The night before the volcanic eruption, Silberis got into a fight and was thrown into the jail overnight for assault. The single-person jail cell was bomb-proof with stone walls, partially underground with no windows, and the only opening was a small slit in the door facing away from the volcano. Early in the morning of May 8th, it erupts, sends a cloud of ash and rock in the speeds of 100 miles per hour into the city of St. Pierre. The cloud reached temperatures of over 1,830 degrees Fahrenheit, flattening the city and burning or suffocating almost all the entire population in less than a minute.
Jeez.
Silberis urinated on his clothing and used them to block the vent in his door. So he's getting a little MacGyverish. Because he knew, like, I don't know how he knew what was happening was happening. But this is the story. So he managed to avoid breathing the deadly, searing, hot fumes, but he still received deep burns on his hands, arms, legs, and back. He wasn't found until 4 days later when rescue teams heard his cries for help. The only other survivor in the direct path of the lava flow was a girl who, when the volcano began to erupt, jumped into a boat and rowed to a cave where she and friends used to play pirates. She was badly burned and was found unconscious after having been washed out to sea on the boat. Silberis later joined Barnum and Bailey Circus, billed as the man who lived through doomsday.
Wow.
He was the first black man ever to star in Barnum and Bailey's greatest show on earth.
This is an unbelievable story.
Right. That's a movie.
It's tragic.
Yeah, it is.
Ooh.
But then you could make the movie, but then he's got to pee on his clothes. I mean, do you shoot around that? What's going on there? That's a...
Maybe there could be a water
bucket.
You
pan away, you just hear splashing. I don't know what you do.
A water bucket in the room.
Yeah.
You can take some poetic license.
Right.
Yeah. Some creative...
How do you feel like your chances are of surviving like an apocalyptic event? You think we're a little soft, right? I know you've been through a lot with the T-Swift...
Yeah,
stuff last night. There was a lot of traffic.
I was like,
did you feel a little trapped? Did it feel like the earth was closing in on you?
There was a while there I wasn't sure I could get a refill on my drink.
Yes.
And that was hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And when we got there, we had to get there. So let's get out and walk around a little bit. We got out and started raining again.
Yeah.
Like just sprinkling.
And you grabbed someone and said, tell the world my story.
And we just ran back to our cars.
Yeah.
While our wives and daughters were just in there getting soaked, you know.
Yeah, but they're enjoying T-Swift. It's a different thing.
Yeah.
That's part of it, too. And, you know, they were, like, I bet the visuals from that show are going to be unbelievable. Like, the video screen with the raindrops
coming
down. The
stuff on the screen.
And when you have this, like, we don't care and we're still going to do this because we love our fans attitude. Because I've seen a few shows like that where it's raining and the band just goes, let's just play on. We're going to stay if you're going to stay. And it was like...
That's what she said. She said rain shows is a special kind of... Now, mm-hmm. What she wasn't saying is they would not let them leave because they were sheltered in place.
Yeah.
So it's like, you guys stayed with us.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, we didn't have a choice.
Yeah, it's like that thing of the fake encore where they
don't let the light
they don't turn the lights up. And then they come out like all surprised, like, you wouldn't let us leave. And you're like, you didn't turn on the lights.
We couldn't see where to...
Yeah.
The security guards would not let us...
Yeah.
There was a
bailiff. But yes, please do another song as long as you're here.
Yes, I did. It was, I think, special and unique. Mm-hmm. So, but I do think if there was some sort of major crisis, I don't know, Johnny. I think
you're my guy in a crisis. I think I want to know if I see you. You're like the stewardess on the plane. Oh, I say stewardess, flight attendant.
There you go.
You're the flight attendant on the plane. Like, if you never get worried about turbulence unless you see them worried.
Right.
That's me with you.
Okay.
I think a lot of people. You're that. You're the coal mine canary.
Okay.
You're in there. Like, if John's looking peaked,
this
is something bad.
Right. It means start peeing on your
clothing and stuffing it under doors.
It's like, sir, it's a flood.
Yeah, sir, this is Arby's. I need you. You're like, we're all going to die. They're out of beef and cheddar. Sir, please get a hold of yourself.
We're going to have to ask you to leave.
No, but I think you do have that. You have like an influence of like you bring perspective and calm to situations. So if you're not calm, we as normal people freak out more.
That's what's interesting because you know why that if I give off that and I'm still not sure if there's
you feel a responsibility to project that.
I'm not sure if there's a punchline coming or not for this.
No, but, I really do feel that way.
So I'm holding, but if that's there, what's crazy is I told someone last night that's because I've already mulled over all the worst case scenarios.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've learned in my last few years, and I can say this without I think pride, like it sometimes takes a lot of courage mm-hmm. for me just to show up. show up in my life because I've already thought of what could go wrong here for all of us, you know. So trying to be courageous, you know, but I appreciate that. So I think what you're seeing here is me just trying to.
Working on like fighting cynicism these days because I think like the reason it bothers me is not just because it's destructive. I feel like cynicism is destructive, but I feel like it is so easy.
Yeah.
And I think it's cowardly to be cynical.
I agree.
Because it's like, well, it's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy too. You can be like, well, this will probably go bad. And then when it goes bad, you can be like, see, I was right. And you might have made it go bad because of your terrible attitude. I think it's so much more courageous to be hopeful about things.
Yeah.
And I want to be around hopeful people. So I want to be one of those people. So all that said, John, I'm working on it.
I think you're doing great.
Okay, good.
I think it's a start. You know, I have a book title. If I give it, I can't give it away.
Okay.
Don't. But if I did, because I want to write a book about hope.
I got a book that I'm writing and I can't even give it away. So do not look for it. Well, it will not be out.
You're not going to find it. But I want to write about from a cynical person's chair about hope. Because usually you hear about hope. Mm-hmm. You might hear from someone who has a story of suffering, you know, but I think like specifically like, no, I'm not a seven. like, I'm not sitting around thinking this is all going to work out, right, kind of thing. And so I think you're right. It takes a lot of courage to go find hope. And that's why God offers it. But it almost, you feel foolish hoping these days. You feel irresponsible.
But most bad things don't happen.
But there's a lot of bad
fears. There are bad things happening. And I'm one of those guys that's like, I don't look like I'm putting my head in the sand. There's all this bad stuff going on. I should be outraged constantly.
Yeah, I think it's less to me about bad things happening and more about my lack of trust in people and systems.
Yeah.
Like that, I don't trust that that's going to work out because I don't trust those people, you know, are thinking for the good of the whole or are thinking through the entire problem or seeing more than one side. The church cynicism is huge. Like, I don't assume you're going to stay. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, how many years? But by the way, they asked a question. This is crazy.
At
the conference, we were talking about speaking and preaching specifically, and they were like, all right, stand up. Everyone stand up. If you've been preaching for a year, sit down. Mm-hmm. If you've been preaching for 5 years, sit down. And I had to get my phone out, Johnny, because I haven't done this math in a long time.
Or if you've been preaching for less than 5 years, sit down.
So yeah,
people stayed up if you were late.
Yeah, it keeps going up. Right. You know. Do you know how many years I've been preaching?
I don't know.
28.
Wow.
I started when I was 16 pretty consistently. And one, I felt immediate shame, like, how can I not be better at this than I am right now? But the other side was like, wow, I don't think everything I feel is cynicism sometimes. I think it's experience.
Yeah.
To some point you go, I've seen this happen 12 times now in my life. Like, you know, I'm confident. Yeah. But it's hard then to hope that maybe something different can happen.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. I think you're on the right path. Let's move past cynicism. But it's a process.
We're going to believe in people, and we're going to trust, and we're going to... And here's the cool thing is, like, when you get surprised by a great outcome, it kind of, okay, now you, that kind of like gives you this little burst of, yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah.
It's more courageous to be hopeful. I'm getting there, John. We're going to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. And hey, you know, if we don't, we'll just get up and try again. That's the good news about grace.
How many times do I got to?
All the times. Every day you're alive, a new chance, Johnny. I don't want to keep trying. I want to be done.
Dear listener, we're glad you gave us another try.
I'm shocked.
If you want to support the show, go to talkaboutthatpodcast.com. You can find ad-free episodes there if you click on that. And all of our archived episodes are on there, video and audio.
Yes.
And subscribe, leave a review. We love it when you do. It helps people find the show.
Yeah. JohnnyW.com and JohnDriver.com are places you can find all kinds of things from the two of us. You can find Johnny's tour dates that are upcoming, maybe buy some tickets there.
It's time for our photo shoot, our group. We need more promo photos, and you've made me wait. You're like, I want to wait. Let's do it, John. It's time.
Well, Jeffrey's home now.
Okay.
So, for a minute. Right. So he's off to his next
he can snap
setting.
I want like a shot of us like arms folded back to back like a buddy comedy, like a this guy looking over our shoulder at each other. I think that's the new.
Yeah, I've been wondering what the pose is going to be. Like, I feel like it needs to be not...
Me pointing at you and you pointing to me like, this clown.
Or like me with an apple on my head and you with a bow and arrow.
That's a wide shot, probably, right? That wouldn't be a close up.
It's a tiny bow and arrow. Oh. It's like one of those finger bows.
That's like a...
Like you're just...
Like I'm cherubic.
I don't know. I'm you're Cupid. Just looking at the apple.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe like the bow and arrow is your wit. You know what I'm saying? Maybe it's like implied. It's like there's an implied bow and arrow. We'll work on it.
You be John Wilkes Booth. No, we won't do any of that. That's in poor taste.
I always have to be John Wilkes. I don't want to be John Wilkes Booth.
No, no.
Hey, listener, thanks for the time. Leave that review, man. Check out that website. And come join us again next week on Talk About That.
Are you concerned about tensions in the Middle East? Do you wonder where we're currently at in the biblical timeline? Are we really in the last days? Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Carl Muller with the Inside the Epicenter podcast. Every week, my co-host, best-selling author Joel Rosenberg, and I answer those questions and more. You'll hear inside knowledge of our meetings with leaders at the highest levels of government in the U.S., Israel, and the Middle East, equipping you to filter the news with biblically sound insights. Find Inside the Epicenter on your favorite podcast app or go to joshuafund.com to listen and subscribe.